Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I'm so delighted to be here this evening. I have my co-host with me.
Well, good evening, Dr. J.R. Thicklin here. What a beautiful day here in sunny South Florida.
Yes, it was a little chilly here today, but a beautiful chill. We haven't had that, so I'm always excited being a New Yorker to actually feel a little crisp air every now and then. Makes you cuddle better.
Well, I tell you one thing. I know for the women of South Florida, they only need 70 degrees to put on boots. So this was boot weather.
Wow. Tonight we have a great show. I always try to bring you the best speakers and the best talents to communicate and interview. And tonight is no exception. I have a friend of mine, Michael Feynman. He has a company called Through Your Child's Eyes. And the reason why I wanted to bring him in to talk about that is because we're here in a pandemic and so many things are different. Life has changed for all of us. And the children are at home, driving parents crazy. I'm in the best season of my life right now because I'm a grandparent. So I don't have any babies here, any children here, but my heart goes out to those parents that are home, homeschooling their children and also working from home, the calamity and chaos of it all. And there's no blueprint, first of all, to being a parent. Now, I don't care how many books you read, how many authorities there are on being a parent and raising a child. The only thing we know for sure is that we have to love them through the process and whatever gifts and talents that they have, that we're as parents are supposed to cultivate them, to encourage them so that they can mature into confident, loving beings. So I have joining us tonight, Michael Feynman.
How good evening, are you? Michael. Good to see you both. Thank you so much. How are you tonight?
I am awesome, Michael. It's so great to have you on. And as I said, one of the reasons why I invited you on is that the show is entitled, What About the Children? Because of the fact that so much is going on. And we as adults, we're at a fast pace. We're trying to make it. We're trying to earn ends meet. And, you know, we see the children, but a lot of times emotionally and mentally, we're not present to actually help cultivate them to becoming. So I thought it was important to have you on to talk about that process through your child's eyes.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, we do get busy. And I think a lot of us feel that we're not doing a good job and we're failing and that our kids are getting the short end of the stick. And the truth of the matter is, though, much of the time they're getting all that they need. But one of the things I've learned and I can't wait to share with all of you tonight and your guests is about being intentional and making a plan. And like you said, there's no rule book. So instead of winging it, let's just make a plan and follow it when we have a minute to think. Because when the throes of life are happening and the kids are running all over the place, we really don't have much time. Like you said, there's so much to get done, right?
There's so much to get done. And so oftentimes, people that can wing it through parenting. I mean, there's a certain degree of winging it when things come, but there's nothing like preparation. And I like what you're saying and making a plan, because the old adage says that when we fail the plan, we literally plan to fail. And, you know, the kids don't come with an instructional manual. And we find out that as they grow and as they develop, you know, we have to be able to grow along with them and understanding how to navigate them through this course of life.
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me in a weird way of the dog whisperer and how he used to say, okay, I'm here to train the humans so that the dog will behave. And we have to be trained as parents along the way as well, right?
Absolutely. Now, Michael, you're a father.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about that journey and how your heart was open to help parents along the way with their child.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, Dr. Val, I've shared my story with you, and it's very it's very common these days. I found myself in a divorce situation as a single dad. I didn't know how to do a lot of things that needed to be done just to take care of a home, let alone be a father, let alone be a mother. Because when in a single parent situation, whether you share custody or not, when your child's with you, you have to be both and you have to learn it. And as a father, I didn't know how to nurture. I wanted him to rub some dirt in and take a lap, you know, and at 5 years old, that wasn't going to work. He was very sensitive. He'd been through a traumatic divorce and he needed me. And so I had to learn a lot very quick. I found out that I was so busy in my career that I really did not have time for him. And I went into prayer and I'm like, Lord, I don't know what to do. I'm working 12 hours a day. I'm trying to put food on the table. I've worked 20 years to get to this place in my career. And my son is getting the short end of the stick. And the Lord asked me, and family, by the way, said to me, look, you know what you've got to do. You have to give up custody. And there was no way that was happening. And so, you know, I went into prayer and the Lord said, are you a dad or are you a businessman? And I said, well, I'm both, Lord, I'm both. And he said, no, I'm not asking that. Are you a dad? Are you a father to your son? Or are you a businessman? And it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I knew I was a dad. And so I literally, which I don't recommend, left my job that took me 20 years in my career to get to this spot in my career. And I knew that I had to leave to be his father. And I did that for 4 years. In that time, I learned not only how to be a dad, not only how to nurture him, but how to be the dad that he wanted me to be and needed me to be, and how to be the dad I always wanted to be growing up. You know, we all have this vision of what a dad is supposed to look like. And many of us did not have that in our lives for various reasons. And so we decide we're not going to do it the way our parents did it. We're going to do it exactly the opposite. We're going to turn 180 degrees. But guess what? That's just the opposite. There's no plan involved in that, right? Mm-hmm. So I learned that I had to, in my downtime, I had to make a plan on how I was going to be intentional with my son, on how I was going to raise him with my values, because he's in public school at the time. And even though he was in public school and I had him at home, they were teaching him things that I didn't want him to learn. And I had to unteach them and then teach him the right thing when he got home. And we did not co-parent well. His mother and I did not co-parent well. So with all of those struggles at once, I had to make a plan because it wasn't working what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why I brought you on as a man, because a lot of times that we focus on a woman as a single parent. And I also wanted to shed light that there are men that step up to the plate and want the responsibility because of love.
Yeah. It was the one thing that mattered to me the most. And it was the hardest thing about splitting and getting divorced was knowing that I wasn't going to see my boy every day. And I was a very hands-on dad from the beginning. But you're right. And his mom had to do the same thing I had to do. She had to learn to be a father in the home and a mother in the home to give him what he needed when he wasn't with me. So, and so many people face this co-parenting issue, you know, well, that sometimes it just doesn't work and you can't function that way. So you have to figure out a way around it.
Yeah. And so tell me what that looked like to begin, and what about the children that not only inspired you to start doing this as a living, teaching and imparting into the lives of parents, how to draw their children into the equations of their life. What did that look like to you at first?
So, you know, I was pretty new to the Lord in that time. I'd been saved, but I really didn't know him. And I really dove in spiritually, and God the Father showed me the relationship between himself and Jesus, his son. And that taught me a lot. But also I spent quite a bit of time in Haiti with a group shooting a movie over there and helping an organization. And I spent a lot of time with children there. And the only thing, they craved food terribly. They needed it, but love just as much. And so these were children that did not know me. They just wanted a hug. As much as they needed food, they also craved love just as much. And so when I came back, I was really a changed man. I went on several trips and I came back, and even with my own son, it was very, very different. And I wanted him to learn what I had learned, my viewpoint on money, on parenting, on finances. Everything had changed dramatically. And I realized and learned what was important. Also, the time that I spent with him one-on-one was a game changer. You know, I had this kind of dream one night, and I thought of myself like in The Lion King, you pictured myself holding him up to the sky to the Lord and saying, you know, here, Lord, here's my son, take him. And the Lord took him right out of my hands. And I watched him go away and I was wrecked. And then the Lord turned around and said, no, that's not what happened. I'm giving him to you. I trust you with him. And he gave him to me. And when all the crazy stuff is going on in your life and they're dilly-dallying and you're late for work and nothing's working because they are not moving, how do we forget what a blessing they are? But it's easy, right? We're so busy trying to get everything done in a day. We forget they're stressed out too. And whatever we're putting off, they're picking up at every age from 5 to 50. It doesn't matter, right? If we're putting that off, they're picking it up and they're running with it.
Well, I know, speaking for myself, I absolutely love being a mother. I mean, they were my driving force when life collapsed around me. They were my heartbeat, the ones that kept me going, and they were the reason why I thrived. So I absolutely love being a mother and absolutely adore and excited about grandmothering. So, you know, they say, want the grandchildren first. I love the entire process.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I've loved every stage of my son is almost 14 now. And I've loved every stage of his life, all the different moments. And people ask me all the time, what's your favorite part of life? Because I really enjoy life and I love to do all kinds of different things. My favorite thing in life is being a dad. The biggest thing God ever honored me and trusted me with was being a dad. And so, you know, I want to empower other parents to be intentional with their children, to experience what I'm experiencing. Mm-hmm. To experience the breakthroughs and the trust. And, you know, he's a teenage boy and he shares things with me that most parents wish their kids would share with them. And it's because of the time and energy I put into them. And you know, when people see your kids and they go, oh my God, he's so good. You're so lucky. I'm like, no, I'm not lucky. I'm blessed, but I did the work and you can too. And that's all it really takes, right?
Yeah, it's definitely work.
Yeah, it is, but it's worth it. It's totally
worth it. You know, Mike. You said some things that are so powerful, and I live by that myself. You know, having been a single father and a single father of five, go try that one on inside of it. And out of five, there was four sons, one daughter. And I will never forget, I realized I needed help very early on. First of all, I didn't tell my daughter to go long. And she was comfortable. And one of the things I did inside of it is that I wanted to know. From my first kid on, let's just face it, as excited as I was that the kid was arriving, I was equally scared because the fact I did not know what to do. I had been a kid, but I had been a father. And so for me, and I say, and that kid, I was 34 years old. And so I remember the closest came to him being born. And I was honest enough to say to God, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I don't know what to do. And when I was doubting myself, what came to me is that, God, you must know something about me that I don't know about myself, that you would entrust me to parent this child. And I think that was the mindset that really kind of shifted my thinking. But beyond that, you know, when we go through those parts of trying to really be intentional, we always want to be a better parent than our parents were. Even if they were good parents, we want to do a one up, and we want to, you know, make sure that we give those things. And I realized I needed help. And I went to a fathering workshop, actually, that was sponsored by the National Center on Fathering with Dr. Ken Canfield. And he offered the 7 secrets of effective father. And one of the first things I recognized was there was a lot of homework I had to do and some things that I had to face.
Sure.
While at that workshop, I will never forget Gordy's table. So a lot of books and resources, but 2 books caught my attention that I think changed my life. No, it wasn't necessarily a Bible, but it was this book here. One was called 365 Things to Do with Your Little Boy. The other was called 365 Things to Do with Your Little Girl. And why was it so important to me? Exactly. Because at that time, young, struggling father, now divorced father, I was more afraid of what I didn't have. So how am I going to make them happy? How am I going to provide? How am I going to do all these things here? And what this book did is show me simplistically 365 things, 365 days in a year that you can do something meaningful with your kid that did not necessarily cost a dime. And at the end of the day, here was the lesson. Children spell love, T-I-M-E.
Absolutely.
And that's what revolutionized life.
Yep, I agree. You hit it right on the head. I had this friend of mine, and I used to sit on his porch and talk with him for hours. And I'm very fast paced, and he was a very slow country guy. And I used to steamroll this guy, but he was so patient with me. But the one, he told me so many things, but the one nugget I never let go of was just that the kids barely remember what house they grew up in. They might remember one of your cars or a few of their toys, but they do not forget that time one-on-one. They remember every minute of it. And when you didn't, they remember that too. And that's pretty simple. You know, and like you said, finding little things to do with your kids, what I learned during this time with my son, and you know, I had literally quit my job. So I made sure that I drove him to school and picked him up in car line. I did whatever I could do to make money in the meantime. But this was born. And also, I made sure that the time that I had with him, that I was with him, I was very intentional with that time, that it was one-on-one, that it was he and I, that I developed tactics and tools from reading and from learning from other people and good fathers, you know. And I interviewed a ton of great fathers just asking them how to be a dad before I ever thought of doing this, just because I wanted to know for myself. But you know what the greatest thing I had to learn was to drop my pride. I'm a dad. And as men, we're taught to be breadwinners and we're taught to, you know, bring home the bacon and all of these things. I had to drop all of that. I had to go prostrate on my face and drop my pride completely. It was inevitable that if I was not going to do that, I was not going to be able to be the father I wanted to be.
That is, you know, awesome.
And we have to really debunk a lot of messages. We have to debunk a lot of messages that come to us from the world, because we think those are the things that we have to do. And oftentimes you think about it, it is conflicting, because we are told you got to be the provider. You've got to do all those things. And so we'll put all our energy into being the provider, but we're neglecting those who we're providing for. And so oftentimes what we see at the end of the day is that we've raised kids, but we missed out on their childhood because we're so busy doing all those things that we did not enjoy the childhood part. And so as a father myself, one of the things I say, even in my introduction, you know, there are a lot of things that I could say that I've done. There's a long list of accolades, president of this, recipient of that, all those awards. And I say every time, and I would gladly give every one of them back, because the highest honor that I have had in this life was that of being a father. Take every award, strip every credential. Being a father is the greatest achievement that I have, because it is the greatest honor that God has given to me to have that responsibility, the stewardship, to be able to go. And I love your word. It's intentional. It's not automatic pilot thing. Right. It's intentional. It's deliberate. And we have to be intentional about what we do.
I agree. You know, I learned something really cool. We went to a camping trip this past, or 2 weeks ago. It's called JH Outback. I highly recommend it. It's for couples or parents and their children. So we had people from all walks of life, and all moms and boys, moms and daughters, and dads and boys, dads and daughters, couples. It was phenomenal. Really well done. Lots of teaching to the kids, lots of teaching to the parents. And it was absolutely amazing. So I went there to make sure that I was attentive to my son, to make sure that I poured into my son, to make sure that he got filled. And my father is also intentional, and he filled me, and he was intentional with me, and he poured into me during that time. And he reminded me that I was made in his image. And he said, and I, like you, I was afraid to be a dad. I never wanted kids. I'm like, no, I'm going to play. I'm going to, you know, run boats and jet skis and just go have a great time and travel the world. But the truth is, I was afraid of being a dad because I thought I was going to screw it up. And I wasn't going to mess it up, because my father is the perfect father, but I'm made in his image. I'm not the perfect father, but I can be a good one if I follow him. And I learned that early on. And that's the thing that got me through, because there was some tough times. And I can imagine with five, there's some nights on the edge of the bed when you just don't know how you're going to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you come back pride. You do. You mentioned pride a few minutes ago. There's this sense of pride that we have, and any sense of failure derails your whole image of yourself. Any sense of failure, especially when the fact that others are looking at you now being a quote, single father, you know, you have one side that is saying, how long are you going before he messes up? And perhaps the other side rooting that you do all right. But the greatest judge of that oftentimes is your own mind, your own conscience. You know, am I going to do this right? Am I going to mess up? And the thing that I've found, and I have such a joy in teaching fathers as a fatherhood educator, is the fact of I find such a blessing inside of the fact of understanding that God has entrusted me. That means that he knows something about me that I didn't know about myself. Yeah, that's awesome. And so it leaves it up to me to find out some things that he knows that I can implement that. And I love it, being able to give, being able to pour in, being able to impart, being able to share and begin to set those core values, because those are the things that they're going to remember. They are. I mean, they can't tell you where the G.I. Joe toy is. They don't know where the last Power Ranger set is, but they will remember the other impact that you had with them one-on-one.
That's right. And the outcome is everything. Look at Dr. Val. I mean, her story is so inspiring. All of her kids are successful. Incredible. Because of the time that she put into them, in a time when she could have easily wallowed in self-pity and went out looking for help. That's not what happened. And so kudos to you for doing that too, because moms and dads alike, you know, even in a two-parent home, and things are very different now. The family unit looks very different than it did, you know, even 50 years ago, let alone 100. We have all different kinds of families now. And so, you know, the key is, how do you create that great balance of mother, father, because they need both. And the father's approval is really important to a child, both male and female. You know, every father I speak to about this will agree. And years ago, I always followed my son's music. You know, I kind of listen to what he listens to. I want to know what he's into. And so you remember that song, Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Nay Nay?
Yeah.
Remember that? That was a cool song, right? And so all the kids were out dancing and singing this song. And I looked into it. The kid, his name was Ricky Hawk. He was 17 when he wrote that song. And his stage name was Silento. And so at 17 years old, this kid found fame. And he's out on the stage and he got fame. And guess what he said? Watch me, watch me, watch me, watch me, watch me. And you go to any playground right now with kids on it, and guess what those kids are yelling to their dad? Daddy, watch me. Daddy, watch me. Daddy, watch me. Watch me jump in the pool. Watch me climb this thing. Watch me do this thing. That approval is so important to a child. And
validation. And
gotta have it. Wow. And moms can do it. You did it, Dr. Val. But most moms, just like we struggle to nurture, most moms struggle to do that part because that goes against their nurturing personality. It goes against the grain because to give the approval, you have to push them a little harder and let them achieve something, right? And that's one of the things that I learned early on as well, is to find things that my son could be very successful at so that his self-esteem was lifted up, so that I wasn't starting my day lifting him up to then encourage him. I wanted him to wake up feeling that. I wanted him to wake up feeling lifted up. And that took a lot of trial and error. Many of the things I tried at night at bedtime did not work. Sometimes it would scare him. Sometimes, you know, I just didn't know what to do. And I had to learn through trial and error and a lot of prayer how to be his dad and how to get him into that place, how to get him feeling positive and good about himself.
Okay. So, Michael, what I want you to speak to is actually have some steps that parents can follow right now to get them activated, because whatever they aren't doing right now, we want them to begin so that they can create that atmosphere and that bond to move that child along to the next level. And Dr. J, after Michael finishes, I want you to talk about how blended families can work together to help in the cultivation of the children.
Very good. Yep. First of all, I want to tell all of you out there that as a parent, I think I've made every mistake there is to make. And one of the things you really need to be conscious of is forgiving yourself and understanding that you're forgiven, because being a parent is not an easy task. Being a parent actually is a very hard task. It's a very rewarding task, but it's very hard work if you do it right, but it's totally worth it, I promise. So I want to make sure that you go easy on yourself. You're not hard on yourself. If you haven't done any of the things that you think you needed to do as a parent and you feel like you totally dropped the ball, let's just wipe the slate clean and start fresh. And let's just say that today is a new day and that you forgive yourself for the things of the past and that you're not going to live under that filter of what you were not or what your parents were not to you. Okay. So I would highly recommend you start there. For younger children, one of the things that I came across that made the most sense to me is the 3-minute hug. The 3-minute hug basically is where you'll grab your child and you will hold on to them for 3 minutes, not hard, but just hugging them while you're affirming them in their ear. And you're just telling them things about them that you're proud of and how much you love them. And I've got to tell you, if you have not done this in the past, they're going to be pretty squirmy. So you're going to have to talk them into hanging on. But chemicals are exchanged, and pheromones and all kinds of things throughout the two bodies that when you're holding one another for that long of a period of time, it starts to create a really heavy bond. And it was designed that way by God. And so I highly recommend you use the 3-minute hug and watch what happens with the squirmy ones. They're the ones that come in for it every day looking for it before it's time. I set a schedule with my son from a very young age. I learned that really helped him a lot. And I know a lot of parents know this, but I know a lot of parents don't. So having a schedule every day, you know, dinner is at 6, bath time is at 6:30, story time is at 7, prayer is at 7:30, and bedtime 7:45. Same thing every day. Now, you can't maintain all the time, but do your best to maintain, because having that structure, no matter what's going on around them, no matter what chaos, no matter whether or not you're the person that you're trying to co-parent with and yourself are getting along or struggling or what, it doesn't matter. They have that grounding of that normalcy. And so I highly recommend you create that. One of the other things that I really love to do with my son, and we did it at this thing, and I hadn't done it in years, I'd forgotten about it. We did it at this camping event with JH Outback, is eye to eye. And that's where you sit down and you look at each other eye to eye, and you don't change glare. You stay focused on one another eye to eye, and you don't talk for a while. And the amount of communication, nonverbal communication that happens during those times are unbelievable. So I would sit on the other side of a table with him so we could both lean on the table on our elbows and just stare at each other. Sometimes it turned into a blinking contest, see who could not blink. Sometimes it didn't, but every time it led to bonding. Every time it led to closeness. Every time it led to a hug. Every time it led to gratitude. So I highly recommend that you do that one as well. Now, again, if I'm going to step it up a little bit to the older kids. These kids are going to push back if they've had their own way. If they've been playing video games at night and you've been taking advantage of the time because you're slammed, don't knock yourself. Remember, you're going to forgive yourself on this. And you're not going to rip it out of their hands, because that's not going to work either. But as you start to transition into things in the evening that you want to do with your child, you're going to have to convince them a little bit, and you're going to have to parent them a little bit. You know, I hear parents all the time talk about video games, and they say, oh my gosh, that Fortnite, I can't believe it. I can't get it away from my kid. Aren't you the parent? Take it away. To me, it's not that big of a deal. You are the parent. You have to be the parent. But in some situations, when you're working very hard, especially with older kids, they've grown up very quickly and they're doing their own thing in the home. And that's been very convenient. But if you really want to be intentional with them and change that, it's going to take some time. So don't do it quickly, but do it and be intentional about it. Write out how long you're going to take, how long you're going to give that before you start having to put your foot down, if you have to put your foot down. But it starts with dinner together at the table. This is something that's been lost for years. I don't know why, but even if it's you and one child, dinner at the table together every night, non-negotiable, phones away. I highly recommend you do that. It's a game changer. Beyond that, you start to schedule other things. Hey, we're going to do Bible time from 7:30 to 8 every night. You don't want to read? I'll read. But eventually you're going to ask them, hey, would you read that sentence? Would you read that chapter? Would you read this? And it's something that you can do together. If it's not the Bible and that's not what you want to go towards, find something else that you have a common interest in where you're eye to eye, one on one. If it's a game of cards, if it's a board game, it doesn't matter. But be intentional about creating that time for the two of you. Another thing is to parent their friends, your children's friends. When your children's friends are around, don't look at it and go, oh my gosh, they're here again. I got to deal with all this. Be the cool parent. Your kids will really appreciate that out of you. And they respect you for that. And they want to have the cool parent. And they're still going to roll their eyes. And they're still going to tell you don't know what it means to be cool. But they are going to understand what you're doing. So be the cool parent when you're around them. Encourage their friends to come in for Bible time even. You know, whatever it is, include them in it if you want to, but have that private time with just your kids one-on-one as well. So it's really not that hard to be intentional. It's just important that you do and that you make time for just them. If you have multiple children, like Dr. JR did, you need to make time for each one separately as well. But the type of activities I talked about are pretty good in a group as well. So those are some of the things, Dr. Val, that I would highly recommend. It's really just a matter of making sure you get that one-on-one eye-to-eye time. It's a game changer. It really is. And dinner is a phenomenal way to start.
Yeah, it actually is. I did that. No one told me to do that, but I did that with each one of my children because I recognized that they were all different with different personalities. They had different likes. Although when you have multiple children, you put them all in a pile at certain times. I knew that it was important for me to do that one-on-one. I would have them in sports and Girl Scouts. And when I would take them driving, I would talk to them about what they want to do, how was school, and what do you want to aspire to be? And I would tell them what I was doing. And see, that's another thing. We don't share. We're not transparent with our children. One of the things that my son said to me, he wrote in a card that was just really, really heartfelt to me was, he said, to the best lady I know that always kept it real.
So, That's huge.
Because I said to them, I can't do this by myself. When I was going through the divorce and things were so hard for me, my oldest son was acting up. Every day I was going to the school, he was fighting. And, you know, I didn't know what to do for him. But I knew something was going on, and I just remembered my little baby's face and how sweet he was, and coming up, growing up, how his little face, he was always like wanting to cater to mommy, and he would sit at my feet while I was watching television, and he used to just rub my leg. That's my oldest son, David. And I had to make a decision to help save his life. And that was the best thing I could do because he was missing his father. And although his father wasn't a real father, the fact that an image of what a father was or what he projected it to be had vanished, it dissipated, it wasn't there. So the anger and the rage set in because he lost his footing. A lot of times we as parents, we try to create an image of what we see on television and we hold on to it, hoping that it will materialize to what we see in the movies. This isn't a Hallmark. This is real life. We don't always ride into the sunset. Life is what it is. And sometimes we get dealt cards that we can't control, especially with this pandemic going on. There are families that have lost their homes. Yeah. There are families that have lost loved ones, children even, lost their husbands. There's a lot going on right now. So it is very important that in spite of the way we feel and what's going on in our lives, that we focus on what we do have, and that's those children.
Yeah.
Because they are the next generation. They are going to set the bar for what happens in the future. So we have to make sure, I keep saying cultivate, cultivate, cultivate. They can't become unless we allow them and nurture them to become.
Yeah. And all of the things that we've learned and amassed, all of the information is their building blocks. You know, I want my son's floor to be my ceiling, but if I don't give him the tools and the foundation, he's not going to have it. And that's same with every kid around you. You know, I think there's a lack of good parents out there, and people will say,
absolutely.
Yeah. And people will say, well, there's a lack of good fathers. There's a lack of good parents out there. The art of parenting, it was lost, and I've studied it, and I can tell you how it happened and when, but we need to take it back. And, you know, kids like your son, you know, his identity is wrapped up in his father. And you know, father doesn't just give approval, they give their identity. And when the kids don't know what their identity is, they get lost. So as a father, I think it's my job to be a father to every kid in the realm of my influence everywhere.
Well, as speaking from the Jewish foundations, they are taught from birth who they are. They are told who they're going to be. They're told about their lineage, where they come from. And I think that this generation that we have, have missed all of that. They don't know where their ties come from. They don't know who they're connected to, who their ancestors were, where they come from, that lineage that makes them who they are. That's what's missing here in this dispensation that we're living in. That's why I believe we got kids walking around with their pants hanging down and they feel okay to curse in front of adults.
Yeah.
And grandparents are being disrespected because they don't know the journey. They don't know the price that has been paid for them to be who they are. So it really begins with us as parents. We have so many babies having babies. And what happens with that is when the babies are having babies, that's all they know because their mentality stopped as them being a baby.
Yeah.
So they're growing up with their children and forgetting the heritage that they actually came from. They're forgetting the lineage that brought them to where they are. And this is where we have to regain, rebuild, and regroup.
Yep. You know what? I spoke to a guy out of South Africa, and he was telling me a story about a preserve where they had all of these, they had moved a lot of animals to this place. And so they took a lot of the juvenile elephants and moved them over to this area and, you know, kind of set them all free. This was a new area and all the different animals are kind of, you know, finding their way and finding their areas and all this. Well, the young male elephants were acting out of character. They were destroying things. They were killing other animals that they would never normally even have contact with. They were literally killing them. They were stomping them. They were, you know, hitting them with their tusks. They were doing all these weird things. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. And one of the curator came from another zoo area. And he said, where are the male bulls? And he said, well, how many? He said, that's your problem. And he brought two male bulls in for 6 months and all of the behavior stopped. And it all changed because they didn't know how to be elephants. Nobody had taught them how to be solid young male elephants. And it's really funny, right? Like what a story, because that really depicts what's going on today.
Wow.
Yeah. Dr. J?
Automatic palate. I continue to think that when something is looked at inconvenient, I think it sets an attitude, really escape responsibility. It's the same thing that we do. I call it substitute parenting. A lot of time when we want them out of our hair, we give them things to do or something to distract them, when in all actuality, what they're needing and wanting is attention. And so we have to be so careful in today's society where we are fueled by likes. You know, I want to be liked. I think that's what happened. I think we did over about a couple of generations ago where this whole idea of just want to be liked by our kids preceded the fact of really what our responsibility was. I looked at parenting, first of all, as the fact that here's a legacy that I've been entrusted with. There's a legacy that's going to be left, whether good or bad. But I understand the importance. So we have to engage in saying, as you said, things have changed. Things have changed. If it's difficult for the biological parents being there, imagine the challenge of, if you would, when we have blended families. Blended families, in my opinion, just like a duck, takes a special type of love, a type of selflessness, a special type of submission to make that work. Because you cannot become self-centered. You must really be focused on the fact of there's a shared responsibility here, and that responsibility is to love this child, even though this child might not be my biological child. If I'm going to love the mother, I must love the child. If I'm going to love the father, you must love the child. And so that is where we have to come in and understand the fact that in this whole thing of coming together, we have to understand core values. What are our core values? What are those things that drive us? What are those things that are our guiding principle? And we must be effectively display that with the children. And one of the things that is oftentimes a challenge, especially, you know, when couples are coming for premarital counseling and they have blended families that are coming together, one of the questions I ask them is, have they spent any time together at all? Or is this going to be total surprise for both sides? Is this going to be something like, okay, all folks, here we are? Because it is so important to understand, anytime you bring a blended family together, in their pre-existing children, you got to understand, it's not just the two adults that are coming together. all the children that are coming together. And if we don't take the proper steps, first and foremost, what we can be creating is war, an adversarial relationship versus one that is understanding and loving. Because now the temptation of competing for your attention has just increased.
Yeah,
it has increased because, you know, here's a kid who's used to having your own room, and now you decided that you notice. I said you decided the kids. I didn't sign off on that, and I have to share a room with this person. And unless we are really having those conversations and understanding those and be willing to realize the effect of us coming together, I often tell people we look in each other's eyes and we're just in love. We just get this time. The kids doesn't necessarily look in each other's eyes and see that as being. Neither do they necessarily look in the eyes of you and see it as being a loving relationship. We have to be intentional. We have to plan. We have to be considerate. You have to walk and talk those things through because we're not involving a new life, involving a life that is going to intersect in one way or another, regardless of whether the other biological parent is involved or not.
Right.
The fact that you're coming together creates another extension of another extension, and it must be held together by love. It must be held together by a commonality. I want to say we share some core values. And I would say this. I learned that depend on the age of the children, this is understand that your role is not necessarily the same. Your role is not necessarily the same. I realized that my role might not have been to be the person who has to be the disciplinarian, but I might be in a role that I need to be the enforcer. I may need to be the one to, if you would, to come alongside to reinforce inside of that and not feel that I'm as a man because of the fact I'm not going to whip. That not might be my role. I must be learning. I must be loving because at the end of the day, we have to understand even in the blended families, we're stewards. And it's important. What we do have a way of affecting children. And I know you can appreciate the old poem or the old writing by Dorothy Law Note, who talk about children learn what they live. And she goes on through the thing. If they live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If they live with hostility, they learn to fight. She goes on and talk about those. But then she makes about if they live with love, what they learn. If they live with all these great things, they learn it. So reality is that in parenting, even with blended families, we're all in full motion at all times. And we have to be intentional. We have to be not only intentional, but we have to be very much in the moment. We have to be to recognize certain things and to more so allow those kids to have their expression, ask those expression before we ever condemn those expression, recognize where it's coming from, because sometimes it could be a longing for attention. Other times it could be because of pain. And we have to be very much astute enough to recognize that. And I'm saying that's prayer. That's not a one prayer and you're done. That's a prayer that keeps you daily praying because of the fact you're encountering things.
It is communication no matter what, though. It is a form of communication when a kid's acting up.
Absolutely.
Because everybody wants to be heard regardless of how young they are. From a little kid, they're always striving and trying to get your attention. Like you said, they're always like, look at me. I can do it, or let me help you. That's those are the three words. They always be like, I can help you. I can do it. Let me do it. So they want to participate in your lives. And so many parents have not been participating in the child's life. So therefore they're raising themselves. And, you know, I've been guilty of, I'm not a perfect parent. As I said, there is no roadmap for being a perfect parent. Right. Let's always talk about leap and grow wings on the way down. I just happen to look up. Because it was hard, it was rough, but one of the things I didn't do is I did not make it their responsibilities. One of the things that my oldest son did was that he automatically made it his responsibility to take care of me. He thought it was his responsibility to take care of his brothers and his sisters.
How old
on that role of I'm dad, I'm the man of the house. I'm like, son, nobody asked you to do that. Yeah. And you're not the man of the house and you're not in control and you're not going to dominate me. You know, so he couldn't get that. Like, I'm man, I'm grown. And he was like, I'm going to drop out of school. He was going to drop out of school in the eighth grade. And I'm like, nobody's going to hire you. I'm going to get a job. I'm not going to school. No sense of going to school. I'm going to work, because he felt it was his responsibility to look after me, to protect me.
And good for you for catching that, because a lot of parents would just push back.
Absolutely. I was like, okay, son. So when I recognized what it was trying to do, you know, anger stepped in first. It's like, I know this boy did not just like try and step to me to tell me what he was going to do. And I was like, oh no, because I know my father and my mother told me, okay, the day you raise your hand on me, that's the day it's going to be mounted on the wall.
Yeah,
exactly. That was my favorite thing. It's going to be mounted on the wall. So I'm like, I rose up and I was like, oh no, we're not having this. We're not doing this.
Yep.
But as I said, I remembered that little face, that baby that I raised, and I nurtured him, and I nurtured all of my children. And I remembered that. And I was like, this is not who he is.
Yeah.
This is not who he is. And a lot of times we see a child acting up and we want to dismiss them or say, oh, he's good for nothing either. Words have power.
Yeah.
So don't ever speak that saying you're no good. Yeah. I don't know what you're going to do. I can't tell you how many times I went up to that school to check on my son because they were calling me saying he did this and he did that. And I can't tell you that. Well, they now have laws against child abuse. But yeah. I used to get them where they acted up. I took that belt and I wore their behinds out. Showed out in school,
yeah.
I beat them in school. Showed out in the grocery store, I beat them in the grocery store because they were not going to overpower me. I'm only 5 feet, so I had to start early in the first.
But you know what? No matter what your parenting outlook is now, your kids thank you. I know they do.
Yeah, because they do.
They needed it. And some kids do need that. And, you know, the Bible says, don't spare the rod or you hate your son. Like, boys need that sometimes.
And ironically, my son that wanted to drop out in eighth grade to go get a job, guess what he's doing now? He's a vice principal of a middle school. He's an educator. He loves children. He loves to teach them. He's like his heart and passion for those kids. He was like, Mom, a lot of kids, the reason why they're bad is because people don't understand. They don't have anybody that's listening to them that will hear them. And when he said, Mom, you listen to me, I mean, it just, you know, like, wow, I got it right. That was my worst of the children, I thought.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. No. I just remembered who he was and who I wanted them to be. And that's what we have to do constantly is speak into the lives of our children.
And going back to that place where he was a little child, you know, I go back to that place of the Lion King and remember who my son is to me. And that
keeps me grounded.
You know, it's kind of like in a marriage when things go sideways and it's really hard. You've got to remember the honeymoon. You got to think about it. You got to remember those times and the thing that drew you together, because man, it's hard, you know, just relationships alone, let alone a kid bucking up to you after everything you've done for them. You know, you just want to set them loose and light their rear end on fire. But it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And you know,
the truth is we've acted out too.
Yeah.
We've acted out in our relationships. We've acted out and showed out in front of our parents, because otherwise I know I got a lot of beatings.
Yeah, but he found
my family need to be in jail. My parents need to be just getting released.
It was terrible. Day and age, I think we all would be. But look at him. He found his purpose through that love that you gave him, through that parenting. He actually found his purpose in life. That's massive. That's all we can hope for our children, right?
Mm-hmm. Who would have thought he would be a teacher and love teaching and then moving to be a vice principal and a principal in a year or two? Who would have thought?
Yeah. Here's a guy who never wanted kids. I can't get enough of them. I serve in kids ministry. I do anything I can to get around them because I love, you know, if I go to a party and there's kids, I'm a lot of times with the kids, you know, because and here's a guy who never thought he wanted kids. So, you know, God has a plan, right?
Yeah. And Dr. J, I'm talking about a father's father. Dr. J, I mean, talk about imparting into his children. I mean, he is phenomenal with his kids. I'm like, do you know they grown?
Not ever, are they?
They never seem to get grown. Although, you know, I was looking forward to the empty nest, you know, that whole empty nest thing they talk about. And, you know, empty nest, you're finally free of kids. And it didn't quite work out that way. As they were exiting, my heart became even more tender. And I never forget when I was dropping my last son off to college. I will never forget. I'm dropping him off in Gainesville. He's there, bro, who's only 15 months older. And I'm trying to have a conversation with him. And he wants to go play in the basketball court. And I'm like going, and I'm looking, I'm tearing up. And I'm like going, okay, well, this is it. And I'm tearing up. And my other son goes, Pops, what's wrong? I said, nothing. Got something in my eye. You know, he goes, no, what's wrong? And I said, he said, hey, look, it won't be all right. He said, trust what you taught us. Trust what you taught us. That only made me really just bawl and start crying, because now I have a kid at this point who's only 19 saying to me, trust what you told us.
That's so good.
He's going to be, first of all, I like being called Pop, but it was for me. But I will tell you this, I learned at that moment that the empty nest wasn't all that was cracked up to be, because I will tell you, 3 months in, I was hearing voices because nobody was calling me, and I thought I heard the phone ring, and I pick it up and go, hey, did you call? Did you call? We didn't call. So, you know.
I know. I miss my kids. You know, every time somebody went off to college, I cried.
Don't believe me.
Yeah.
When they come home, I cry. When they leave, I cry.
That tenderness is all set up for the grandkids. It's a whole setup. God got you.
They leave me, I cry.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, I made a deal with my son when he was 8. I'm like, if you could just stay right here, this is a perfect age. I love it. And I've enjoyed every stage, but at 14, there's this, wow, I'm so proud of you for being 14. Like, oh my gosh, it's almost like we're 5 years away. This boy's going to be pulling out, going to school. I'm not ready.
Savor
for
the moment.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I really do. And I have a lot of friends that have kids his age, and we all feel the same way. You know, it was just not ready. Not ready.
I know. I kept saying, is this ever going to be over? The dropping off to the games and to this movie and to this play. It was just constantly. I was constantly just moving. Somebody had to go somewhere, and sometimes 4 different locations.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I look back, but you know, when you're engaged with your children, it doesn't even seem overwhelming. It's just when you look back at what you did, you become exhausted. Yeah. But while you're in the midst of doing it, it's effortless because you're committed to who they are.
And supernatural strength, man. Yeah. I mean, no way can we do what we do in a day as parents without it. No way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So parents, I know it's hard. I know it's rough right now. I've been there. But I haven't been where you are right now, walking out this pandemic with things so differently, and always the nervousness of, will your child get sick, and what that would look like if they did, what would happen if you got sick. There's a whole different set of challenges that we're facing right now. So we don't want to negate the fact or dismiss it to be insignificant right now. It is a great burden that you're carrying right now with these so many uncertainties. But one thing I want to encourage you to do is have faith.
Yeah.
You always got to rely on a power much higher than your own. Yeah. I'm reminded, my favorite book says, in him we live, we move, and we have our being. We can't do anything without God. No matter how we try and dismiss it or think we're doing things on our own strength, there's no way we can function. There's no way we can elevate and get to the next level unless we have that higher power that's there embracing and strengthening us and giving us our breath each day. And that's what the power of God through Jesus Christ gives us. Amen. So they're embrace going a faith higher than your own.
I agree fully. I could never do it without it. And, you know, I would encourage parents to listen, your kids are going through this fear too. You know, we went through the Cold War, right, as kids, and the fear of nuclear missiles coming over the fence, you know, or whatever. But yeah, your kids are in fear too. And one of the things that I've taught my son that I really encourage you to teach them is how to be in touch with the Lord himself. And one of the things I tell my child is I say, look, man, I'm going to be with you for the rest of my life, but I'm not going to be with you for the rest of yours. And so I need to give you the key, the text number, the cell number to my God, that so that you can call on him just like you can call on me. So that if you're not with me and you don't know what to do, you still have a father, because your father is perfect in heaven. This one's not perfect, but he loves you a lot. But I want you to have that same access I have to the Lord. And I want to share that with him.
Dr. J. Are you with us, Dr. J?
Absolutely. And I think
you've been having technical difficulty.
Yes, I'm with you. Yes, I'm enjoying this that I'm hearing. I've been seeing the technical difficulties, but the jewel of what you're sharing is so powerful. And I think to every parent out there that may find difficulty in this time, that they must be reminded of where their strength is coming from. They must be reminded. It also takes having a right perspective, even when it comes to children. I'm reminded the scripture tell us, lo, children are a heritage of the Lord. And the fruit of the womb is his fruit. And as arrow in the hands of a mighty man, so are the children for you. And then apparently this part here, I must have took into action. Blessed are the man whose quiver is full, and my quiver is full. But I come from a large quiver. I'm the seventh of 10 children. I didn't think I would want a big family, but five kids was enough, but it taught me. And one of the things I encourage when I teach men and our men group and father's education and any parent, be careful that you don't give yourself your report card too early. Don't grade yourself at your worst, because I tell you, unlike the school, when our kids come every 9 weeks or whatever with their progress report, it gives them a report, a reflection of what they've done and their performance over that period of time, and we get to measure it. When it comes to parenting, that report card may come intermittently. It may come at any time, because as our kids grow, sometimes they're able to express. Dr. Val taught her son when he wrote in a card, to the best woman he knows, and you know, who always kept it real. Oftentimes, as they mature, they find ways of expressing to you what you meant to them, your guidance, even your strictness, even the fact that you pushed them, even the fact that your expectations were great for them, and they understood. Dad, I understand now why you want me to settle for being average. That you told me average was today's failure. That it was my enemy, and that I could be greater because greater lives in me. Now, that message didn't seem to be taking root at the time, in real time, but when you look now and you give soul and what's guiding them, they look back and say, thank you for bringing me. Thank you for setting the standard. Thank you for reaching high. And that's why I tell parents, in the minute, none of us may not always feel like we're the greatest parents, but I tell you, to be deliberate, to be intentional, and to allow the Lord to lead and guide us and pour into us is so incredibly important. I'm telling you, I'm enjoying my report card now, and I'm enjoying it in the form of now granny. I didn't think I would be around for grandkids, but three grandsons, and boy, I love FaceTiming those guys, and it can't be if we get them all together, especially the one that is here. It is like the greatest thing in the world, because I also get to give them back to the parent.
Thank you so much, Dr. J. And so I want to thank you, Michael, for joining us on Hot Topics from the Soul. And in closing, I would like to say to the parents, know your worth, know your value, that you're valuable and significant to your children. And you're valuable to yourself. They can't be unless you be. And we need you to be in a place of strength and empower so that you can pass that down to them, because they're your legacy. They're your legacy. So pass along the love, and so that they will remember that mama and daddy loved me, and the courage, although it wasn't convenient, they always showed and stood from a place of strength and faith. Because without God, we can do nothing. This has been another Hot Topics from the Soul. Good night and God bless.
Good night.